Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio networks that focus on solutions for the Black community, presents Black Urban America for people that are listening by laptops. You may dial 516-531-9540. Press 1 if you have a comment or a question. On Tuesday, we have Black Urban America. I'm your host. My name is Kenny Jones. On Thursdays, we have Port of Harlem by Wayne A. Young out of D.C. On Saturdays, we have Provocative Thought by Carter Sneed out of Philadelphia. All programs begin at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For tonight, well, first of all, I'd like to say happy Kwanzaa, happy holidays, happy new year to everyone. I hope everyone is safe out there, and I hope everyone enjoyed their families and any other festivities that you was involved in. For tonight, can anyone define African-American culture? Can anyone describe the Black Arts Movement? How is the Black culture today? An artist best known for his Black art prints and reproductions relating to Africa will be explaining all that this evening. Also, this artist had one of his artwork in Muhammad Ali training camp in Deer Park, Pennsylvania. And therefore, this is an international, well-known artist who traveled the world, over Europe, to the Caribbean islands and over the country. So we're going to be discussing culture, Black art, defining it, and what have you. Tonight, welcome, Mr. Alan Dean. How are you, sir? Welcome to Black Urban America.
Good evening, Kenneth. And thank you for inviting me to be on your show this evening.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. Again, anyone that have any questions or comments, you may dial 516-531-9540 and press 1. Let me start off by asking first, how did African Americans lose their African identity, or did we ever had it?
Kenneth, what I'd like to do this evening, I want to introduce a different perspective on understanding culture that most people may not think about or are unaware of today. And if you don't mind, I'd like to finish, one part on introducing the understanding of culture before taking any questions or comments. So I'm going to begin. As an artist, I consider myself to be in the business of culture, which I understand to be growth and development, not the business of making money. But to have cultural growth that will benefit society, I know that making money and culture must develop together. Culture is a word most of us believe we understand very well. We have heard this word used many times in our lives, and we have used it many times in conversations about ourselves, our way of life, or when we are talking about other people's way of life. We also use the word culture whenever we talk about people from different countries and religions. However, most people today misuse and misunderstand this word culture. Culture is the root word of cultivate, and when I say this, the meaning of culture should become a little clearer because most of us understand the word cultivate to have something to do with growing or developing something. The true definition of culture is growth and development. And if this is true, any way of life that does not bring about growth and development can't be considered culture. In our conversations today, what we mistake for culture should be classified as people's traditions, customs, rituals, and even superstitions that different societies have adapted over many generations for various reasons. Just because a community of people practice something daily does not mean that this serves their growth and development. To begin to understand the problems we face in our individual lives, in our society today, we must start studying the difference between culture, traditions, customs, rituals, and superstitions versus religion. We must learn the difference between what is helping us from what is hurting us and why. The culture of science or superstition. When people study the laws governing our world, they will accumulate a lot of information to pass down to the next generation. Then the next generation wouldn't have to start at the same point as the previous one. This process of growth and development is the concept that we have today with the modern university. When someone goes to a university, they will learn everything accumulated on the subject of their interest so that they wouldn't have to start from the beginning. They would only need to start where the last age left off. Our modern day society developed on this cultural system of scientific growth and development. If you had the formula to any scientific discovery, you would get the same results no matter how many times you experiment with it. The recipe will not do one thing for one person, someone else. God doesn't need science because all he needs to do to create anything is say be. However, our development through the knowledge of science has given humanity a way to manage the world. Conversely, a society that believes in magic and superstition cannot pass their knowledge down to the next generation to develop further. It's not like in the movie Harry Potter, where they had a book of potions where they could get the same results every time they cast the same spell. Many people believe that the many problems we see in Africa today result from the African slave trade, and we blame it all on the white man. But I believe Africa's problems are based on them clinging to customs and traditions and the belief in superstition and magic from the past. Furthermore, I know that the white man did not give them their belief in magic. Some African Americans want to reconnect to Africa, its history, and past great civilizations to solve black people's problems here in the United States today. If we start practicing customs and traditions of a people from the past, we may be bringing back some of the very things that got them in trouble with God in the first place. For example, I want to tell you about when I visited the city of Dakar, Senegal, West Africa, to participate in an art show with many other African American artists. I was fascinated by the beautiful sights and people I saw and met there, and I could hear the call to prayer from anywhere in the city 5 times a day. I considered all this a beautiful experience, but something else happens. My African tour guide told me that he could take me to an Islamic leader and receive a blessed pouch from him that had pages from the Quran in it. He said that this pouch would protect me from all harm if I wear it around my neck. Also, he said that if I was in a plane crash, I would be the only one to be blessed to survive. Furthermore, if someone tries to shoot me with a gun, the bullet would not hurt me. I told this person that I was sorry, but I could not accept that gift because this was not my belief in religion. Most of the Muslim men I talked to in Dakar tried to convince me that their form of Islam is better than others because they believed in magic, but I did not see it that way. I was also shocked when I realized that most men wore all types of pouches under their clothes to protect them from the many things they feared. While I was hearing and seeing all of this, I realized that there were no superstitious beliefs in me and that they could not sell me on their ideas about magic or their superstitions. After realizing this, all sorts of thoughts from the past started bombarding my mind. For example, the white man took away my African language and history, so I know nothing of my past people. I realized that God had separated me from their belief in magic through my ancestors' journey through slavery here in the United States. Then I began to reconsider everything that I believed and thought to be true from that point on. We don't need to go back into the past to find success by taking on the customs and traditions of a people long gone. I understand now that all we need to do to become the most successful people on earth is to be the first to come back to obeying God as righteous people. Then God will bless us to live a victorious life here on earth that no other people in history have ever lived. Plus, we will find God's promise true in the hereafter where we will live forever in heaven. Kenneth, this is my first part on understanding culture.
Okay, now, but in your definition, how does that define, how does that integrate or define black culture?
Well, when I speak about the difference between the culture of science and superstition, I believe African-American cultures still have deep beliefs and superstitions within it. Give you an example. New Year's just passed, right? And, you know, I can't convince my sister that if she don't eat black eyed peas on New Year's, is not going to affect her upcoming year. And I was in the market last week, and I saw that the market I was in, they had a special section where they had nothing but black eyed peas, right? And I talked to African-Americans. In fact, I even talked to people who live in the United States from Africa that has adopted a tradition of eating black eyed peas on New Year's, right? So our culture here still based on magic or the belief in superstition. We know if we go down to New Orleans, we can get some roots put on us. And if we go to Haiti, we know that the religion there is voodoo, right? So what I'm saying is that we need to, if we want to progress as other cultures are progressing, we need to stop passing on to our children in the next generation superstitions that have no foundation in the belief in God or have no foundation in the understanding of science.
So what should our identity be in terms of our culture?
I'm sorry, Kenneth, what was the question again?
Oh, what should our identity be in terms of our culture?
Our identity for our culture should be a belief in worship in one God and our striving to be righteous people.
When you say righteous people, what does that mean?
That means that, for example, let's take Abraham. Abraham is considered to be the father of the three major religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, right? And I believe that Abraham set the example for us on what we must believe, say, and do to be righteous people to God. And the example that Abraham set is that I'm sure that he loved his father and his family just as much as any one of us. But once he realized that his family and his people worship idols and that they were evil people, he separated himself from them, right? So what I'm saying is that to be righteous, you can't take a righteous person as an unrighteous person as a friend, even if it's a family member.
Okay, well let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Earlier we talked about traditions, values, and practices. Let me give you an example of a tradition, value, practice that have been practicing, I say, pre-80s. Let's say during the Civil Rights Movement, Jim Crow laws, and up to about the 80s. Party hard on Saturday night. Even the deacons go out drinking. And then on Sunday morning, as a practice, every black person in the neighborhood or in the community or on the block or wherever, they'd be mom, dad, and the children will go to church. Then after church, it will be a Sunday dinner. That's a tradition and a practice. I know my family used to practice that. I mean, we don't practice that no more, but my family used to practice that while I was coming up, and every other black family was practicing that. So how does that tradition be negative? Because you had to say we had to get rid of some, and so some people felt, oh, we don't go to church. We don't go to church. We can't be forgiven what we did on Friday and Saturday night. Or have it? It's not part of some magic or what have you.
Well,
that is a practice. That was a practice. That was a regular practice. I said for 90% of black families in this country pre-80.
Yes,
I said from the 19th century up to the 20th century.
But as you said, most people don't practice that way of life anymore.
Well, we still have some. Right? I mean, don't churches be filled. No churches be filled to the hilt.
There's
a lot of black folks. It may not be entire black families, but somebody from that family is going to church in their big white hat. It's usually women, black women. So that practice is still happening, but not as a structural practice like it was in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. You know, like the whole family, you see the entire family, you know, kids going to Sunday school. After Sunday school, everybody be in church at 11 o'clock. The church would be let out 1, and you had your Sunday dinner at 3. And if you don't go to church that Sunday morning, you will not be forgiven for your past sins that week.
Yeah, Kenneth, I have a second part to understanding culture that I believe that it would help us to understand where our culture is today.
No, what that question was, you were talking about traditions, values, and superstition, whatnot. That was a tradition. Mm-hmm. So I want to know, since you speak about God or whatever, was that a negative tradition or a positive tradition? And should we not appreciate some of our past legacies?
Well, God said that if all the ocean were ink and all the trees were pens, and he add another ocean to it, never would the word of God come to an end, right? So culture must be a system of striving to grow and understand more each day. I wrote a book a couple of years ago, and I named it Climbing the Stairway to Culture. But I had it on the market for a couple of years and didn't sell any copies. So I took the book off the market and decided to introduce the understanding from it in a different way. But the reason why I named the book Climbing the Stairway to Culture is that you want to go up to the next, you can't go up to the next step without leaving one step behind, you see. And what I find that one of the number one problems I see with humanity is that we as a people, we are clingers. We cling to things and we don't want to let it go, rather it's good or bad for us, you see. So we need to continue to learn and grow in understanding and knowledge. But right now, most people in the world is clinging to what was passed to us from the past instead of knowing and understanding the truth for ourselves. For example,
we're clinging on to the past, right? Let me ask you something about clinging on to the past. In our past, I say 75 years, there was some positive activities among Black folks. Not everything was gloom and doom. There was some great communities. There was some great businesses. We owned airports. There was some great leaders that came up, like Malcolm X, Dr. King, Mega Evers. You know, it wasn't all gloom and doom. So how come we cannot appreciate some of the legacies in our past? How come we cannot, like in 2 weeks, on January 17th, we get ready to honor a great Black man by the name of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was assassinated for us so we could have conversation like this while being lynched. How come, how come we can't honor our legacies and our past? Not all traditions with Black folks consider magic, especially when it comes to family.
I see your point, and you're correct. We need to honor and appreciate the good legacies that's in our past. That's why I said earlier, we need to study the difference between customs and traditions and what is hurting us from what is helping us and why. So we need to make that study so that we can leave the things that's not helping us behind. But the good things that you're talking about, no, it's like, you know, I grew up in the 60s. I enjoyed going to house parties, soul music. In fact,
nothing wrong with that. This was before the gun.
I enjoy singing soul music myself, right? So there's, as far as I'm concerned, you're right. There's nothing wrong with that, but we have to do our best to separate that which is bad from that which is good, and hopefully we're able to leave that which is not helping us behind.
Tell me what was bad besides the brother from synagogue that wants you to wear that thing around and the Quran around your neck, but believe that you're going to stop, instead of the magic and some of the stuff that came from. And I'm going to tell you, some of those belief systems, those traditions, like the Black Eyed Peas and slavery, they kept a lot of people going. They believed that they was going to escape from that plantation, and they were going to believe they're going to be free, and that their child is going to have to grow up as a slave. You know, so there were some traditions that may sound odd to us or magical, but it was a technique of survival for some folks back in the 18th century. And I guess either bowl of black peas might be, I say, hey, you know what? We honor our ancestors, because this is how they survived. And plus, Black Eyed Peas is good for the digestive system. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah,
I eat a bowl. It's good for the digestive. It'll clean you out. It'll clean you out.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of eating Black Eyed Peas maybe once or twice a year.
You know what, Brother D?
But
not all traditions are bad. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, look at the Italians. I mean, they got their, you know, when the baby was born, hey, before 6 months old, they got to get their little communion on the put the water on the baby head. Not all traditions are bad. Jews, they eat their fish every Friday. They fast, you know. Muslims.
It's not a point of tradition.
For 40 days. So not all traditions are bad. You know, some traditions, yes, you're right. There are some traditions that have that magical stuff, but you cannot, to me, I want to speak about me, you cannot criticize a person for what they believe in, especially if that belief is keeping them safe, keeping their family fed, keeping a roof over their head, getting them up in the morning. Like, for example, talk about practice. A lot of people, before they go to bed, they get on their knees and pray before they close their eyes. That's a daily practice. And some people really believe if they don't read some scripture and if they don't pray, they may not wake up in the morning. All I'm saying, you cannot criticize anybody's practice.
Kenneth, I understand what you're saying, but what we must take into consideration is that when people believe different things, they're not going to agree with each other. But
I'm we're the only culture that's guilty of that. I think the Black culture.
No, I don't think
we're the only culture that's guilty of that. White Catholics get together on the project and Lord, they can make some money. So far, we're the only culture that's guilty just because you're a Christian and I'm a Muslim, or you're a Buddhist, or you're Hebrew. We cannot work together in solving some of the issues in our Black community. That's a mindset that we have to get out of.
Yes, Kenneth, but, as a guest on your show, you know, I'm introducing what I understand to be culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. I'm bringing up examples. I'm asking questions.
Yes, Kenneth, please, listen to me. You know,
yes, I'm listening.
We're not going to be able to agree on what I'm saying, and I don't want to debate you on what's right or wrong. What I want to do is just introduce the concepts of culture that I've come to introduce. Then the listening audience can consider whether it's right or wrong. But for us to debate whether it's right or wrong or how we should look at it, you know, I really don't want to do that. I have
two more parts of culture. You misunderstood my question.
But I understand you.
I wasn't saying that you're wrong. I'm not a debater. I just ask questions so you can elaborate. I'm just playing the devil's advocate. I'm just asking questions that the main average person on the street may ask you to elaborate on. That's all.
That's all
I'm doing. I never ever said your perspective is wrong, your perspective is right. That's not my bag. You are teaching us, just like you in the classroom, teaching your perspective. Students going to ask you a question, and you better be ready to answer it, or you're going to lose the classroom. That's how I am. I'm a student right now, and I'm asking you a question, and I'm giving a sample on the reason why I'm asking the question. So don't think I'm challenging you or saying that your perspective is wrong or what have you. Nah, I'm asking a question.
Okay, I'm sorry. What was your question again?
Well, you answered it already. Go ahead. You said you wanted to do the second part.
Okay. I have a second part on culture that I think is very important for people to hear and understand. I call this portion is called the power of impression. As an artist, I understand that the key to art is the power of impression, which means the ability to mold, shape, or influence. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth with the power to impress, influence, and guide mankind. Then he placed within the nature of the human being the ability to be impressed and molded by the physical creation. For human nature is like wet clay. By pondering the wonders in the heavens and the earth, humanity grew in knowledge and eventually understood science. But today, humanity is lost in man's ability to reshape the mold by impressing people with our own power of impression. I believe many of our inner city problems are related to the fact that most inner city people see little, if any, of the natural world, and all that they see is man-made. Our youths are impressed with tennis shoes, gold chains, expensive cars, tattoos, guns, etc. As adults, open for impressions ourselves, we have been charmed by the desire for many material things that we are impressed with or we buy to impress others. We have been sold products and lifestyles not to help us develop intellect, culture, or righteousness, but to stimulate man's wealth. Whoever controls the power to impress people the most controls education and man's growth and development. The commercial media, television, cable, movies, and the radio of today have the enormous power to impress the people and reshape man's mold. The commercial media should be helping to educate and uplift our society, but instead they are encouraging the people to fall victim to their weaknesses to make more money and rule over us as our God. We look back into our history at what we consider ancient times at those who worship idol gods and say to ourselves, now how dumb can some people be? How could those people carve images out of stone and wood and then start worshiping these things as their gods? We invented the television and the commercial media of today, but now we worship the very things we made. And this is the same thing that the ancient people did, but they only had rocks and wood to work with to build their pagan gods. But we here in the 21st century have a lot more to work with to create our pagan gods. Commercial media, television, cable, movies, and even the radio have become the 21st century pagan gods we created and are now worshiped. The technology itself is not evil, but encouraging people to fall victim to their weaknesses to make money is evil. We see new technology introduced in the marketplace every year and believe we are going forward culturally. However, the truth is we are going back into idol and pagan worship society. What we created is now dictating who we must be to serve it. The commercial media have remolded the purpose of the human being into something that has no other reason for living but to feed it money. The commercial media has so much power over us because most of us worship popularity as their God. and the commercial media control who and what becomes popular in this world. We fuel the fire of destruction against ourselves by giving our money to products that serve our defeat by commanding the people to do everything shameful and disobedient to God. That's the power of impression.
Okay.
So what you think?
Now, how does that fit? How would that fit in using that theory, that perspective? How would that describe our culture today? You kept on saying the 21st century, we're materialistic people, you know, mass media, you know, but you know who's behind mass media, right? You know who own the five major companies that own mass media, right? It's not us. Is mass media shaping our culture today?
The way I see it, the only culture that exists in the United States is a commercial culture. You know, the people we have been molded into what the commercial media has presented to us through you know, the television program. It's like, you know, take the style, our style of dress. You know, if my grandmother would come back alive and see how most women skin tight clothes today, I think she would just grab a stick off a tree and just go down the street, start whipping girls, tell them they better go home and put some clothes on.
That may be true. But so what you're saying is there's no more black culture. It's one culture called American commercial culture. That's what you're saying.
That's the only culture that I see exists in the United States. And with this culture, the United States is encouraging the world to follow them in their shame and disobedience to God.
So, Brother Dean, so you're trying to say,
yes,
what you're saying, what I'm getting, and this is how I'm going to interpret it, that black folks had assimilated into the dominant American society. You're saying that we really don't have a culture anymore, and some of our traditions today are antithetical to our growth.
But it's not just African Americans. The European Americans.
I'm not about African Americans, Brother Dean. This is called Black Urban America. I'm only concerned about African Americans. I know what other cultures are doing and stuff like that, but I'm trying to get African Americans to see other perspectives. But that's why I have people come on to explain their perspective about various issues. That's why I always ask, would you like to discuss what have you? This is for us, black folks. We need to change, or we need to understand what's going on, how we being, you're saying we're being brainwashed, that the little culture that we did have, we're losing it due to commercialization. So that's a very meaningful perspective, ideology there that people need to hear. I'm concerned about my people, and I'm sorry to be narrow-minded like that, but I'm not gonna apologize for being concerned about my people and how we maybe need to change. Or like you said before, grow and develop.
Yes. And this perspective of the power of impression should help us to see that there are silent forces that are influencing us, that once we recognize what's happened, it should help us to guard from falling victim.
So what are some of those silent forces?
Well, as I say, the advantage the commercial media have is that they can hire someone to do whatever they want to do to make something popular. And even the actors or actresses they hire may not even believe in what they're doing, but they believe in getting paid, right?
It's about that money.
Once something is made popular in the media, the masses of the people start following it, right, and thinking it's good,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like when you mentioned back in the 50s or 60s how people dressed and so forth. You know, in the 50s and 60s and even the 70s, almost no one had tattoos, right? But the commercial media
on the white sailors and the bikers.
You know, it was only a few. The commercial media has made it popular to where now most people have tattoos, right? And we have to understand that we learn and see these things on television and in the movies. And that these things have the power to influence us into doing it.
And they take out black celebrities to promote different behaviors.
That's my point, that the actors and so forth, you know, they seek in their own fame and popularity. So they are willing to take the money to set a bad example, you know, for our youth and for our community.
So how can we get back to having a positive sense of culture?
We
can't get back there. We cannot have
we can get back, but only by the grace of God and by learning about worshiping God and what God wants, demands of us to be blessed by Him. For example, what I always relate to, God says that, God has already given us the solution to the problem. It's just that I don't see anyone trying to follow that solution. God said,
one thing you say about black folks that we haven't lost, I don't care how much of hustlers or gangsters or millionaires or how many tattoos or how much ratchetness or skin tight dresses you see a lot of black folks with crosses around their necks, always praising God. When they went on board, they thanked, the first thing that I like to thank God, my Savior. We haven't lost that sense. So there might be according to your ideology, it might be some help there some assistance coming, because like I said, you know, I don't care, a gangbanger could get 15 years. He got a cross around his neck. He believed in something.
Yes,
he carried the Bible to a jail cell. And he carried the Bible to a jail cell.
Yeah, but let me introduce to you what I understand to be true. God says, let there arise from out of you a band of people who come together to do good and forbid each other from doing wrong, right? So to give you an example, this is what I consider to be the cultural condition of a people. So this is what I say. The cultural condition of a people is the moral purity and tranquility a collective group of people encourage each other to achieve, or the moral decay and chaos a collective group of people allow each other to descend to by making excuses for bad conduct. You see? So when I say that God said, let thee arise from out of your band of people to come together to do good, forbid each other from doing wrong, right? It's like we as a people and we as a society, we are not stopping each other from doing what we know is wrong. There's a chapter I will call the nature of evil. And the nature of evil is that if you allow a family member, a friend, a business, or even our representative in government to do things that we know are wrong, they are eventually going to become evil. We all have the potential to become evil if the people around us allow us to do things that we know are wrong, right? This is why God says that to be righteous, you can't take an unrighteous person as a friend, you know, because an unrighteous person is going to encourage you to do the wrong things. Why?
Encourage the unrighteous person to do the right thing.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I missed that point. What was that again?
I turned it around. I asked the question. How come a righteous person can get an unrighteous person to do righteous?
It doesn't work that way, unfortunately, because we only have power over ourselves. We can't make someone do what they don't want.
Don't hang out with an unrighteous person. You said, because unrighteous person will make you do wrong. And I say, how come that righteous person don't have the power of oppression to get that unrighteous person to do right? For example, see a prostitute every single day, every day. You're a woman, you got a couple kids, you got a husband. You see this young prostitute, and you pass by every day, and you say, hey, sister, how you doing? My name is Sister Smith and everything. Why don't you come to church with me on Sunday? You know, at the church, you get something warm in your belly and everything like that. Why don't you come to church with me every Sunday? That's what I'm talking about. Here's one righteous person inviting an unrighteous person to do a righteous task to change her behavior. I'm just bringing that as an example, you know. But in your way, that righteous woman shouldn't even speak to that unrighteous woman because of her negative ways.
Is that a question?
Yeah. I said, well, you think that's just an example. Like, how come we can't? I'm in a field where I work with people with negative behaviors. All right. Mm-hmm. You mean to tell me that I shouldn't try to get someone out of a gang because they're unrighteous? I know they're doing unrighteous activities, unrighteous tasks.
I got a perspective I like to introduce. It's called the three codes of conduct. First of all, whoever coined the phrase that one bad apple will spoil the whole barrel knew exactly what they were talking about. And what we've been doing is we have been allowing a whole crop of our youth to be spoiled and misled just by a few that don't want to do the right thing. So I think that what we need to do to try to improve the youth problem that we have is to separate our public school system into three codes of conduct, right? Because if we want to save our people and culture, we need to separate the kids that want to do good from those who don't want to do good, or we want to lose them all.
That's against the law.
And that's the only way I see that will work, because when you mix good kids with bad kids, all of them are going to end up bad. You know, there's no such thing as we've been spending our money on saving the bad kids. We need to take our money and start spending them on the kids that want to be obedient, want to be good, and give them a space to where they don't have to be bullied by kids that don't want to act right. So
what you're saying, Brother Dean, well, what you're saying is that the youth...
You can't say that. You can't say that kids until they decide they want to do good.
Let me finish the question. You're saying that the youth that are not doing well, that are not attending schools, that are displaying negative behavior, let them rot. Don't even try to save them. But put all our energies and our resources for the kids that want to function well, that want to learn, they want to rebuild the community, they want to take our culture to the next level. Focus on them.
Well, all kids are going to have to go to school, right? But if we separate the
system
into three, if we separate the school system into three codes of conduct, the first code of conduct is where the kids with the best conduct go. And then
the third code of conduct
is where the kids with the worst conduct go. And then the second stage hear me out first
okay.
Before you have a question. The kids in the worst conduct, when they show that they want to do better, they can move up to the second conduct level to be tested to see are they willing to be conduct themselves well enough to go up where the best conduct exist. But we need to separate the kids that want to do good from those who don't. And then have an in-between to where, because even in the best conduct stage, if a kid don't want to act right, we can know more and start doing wrong. We, instead of expelling them or kicking them out of school, we put them down in the second conduct code, right? They might improve and go back up to the first, but if they continue to get through,
I used to work very closely with the schools. 40 years ago, 35 years ago, they tried that. And what the outcomes were.
35 years ago?
Yeah. What the outcomes were. Those kids did not graduate. You had a 16-year-old that could read and write. And 85, 90% of those kids went to prison. When you do separation, what they found out, when you do separation, they look around their peers, they see everybody's acting out, everybody got the same malicious behavior, and they don't have no motivation, no courage. And in fact, staff don't even work with them. All they do is sit in the classroom all day and just get in trouble. And nothing happens until they hit the street, start stealing cars, shooting, robbing, and selling drugs.
You can't be talking about the conduct level where the best kids go at, right? Because everybody
not the best kids. I talk about your low functioning youth. They tried that. And they did not succeed. They were given a special name called special education.
I wish there were things that we could do for the kids that are bad, right, and don't want to act right. But Yeah, if we mix them with the kids that want to do right, then we're going to lose all the kids. So we have to.
I don't see any other way that we can do it. The adults.
We have to do it
before we're going to lose all the children
in the whole culture, in the whole. You see what I'm saying?
The adults and the elders. We have a lot of black professionals in this country. The adults and the elders had to stop utilizing Eurocentric tools to teach our children and start developing Afrocentric tools to teach our children, and maybe we can save our culture. Yo, Brother D, I thank you for coming on the show. We only have a minute left. I really thank you. It's been a very good conversation, very interesting, very different thought. I really do appreciate you for coming on the show tonight and take your time out to explain your views.
Thank you for inviting me to be on your show. I enjoyed being on your show, and thank you for the opportunity for me to introduce my understanding of culture.
Okay. All right, folks, that's it. That's another week. We into another year. And we're gonna be doing this every week, and we're gonna bring on different guests. And I just wanna thank everybody for 2021. And as I always said, I am because we are. We are because I am. Everybody, have a good week. I'll see you next Tuesday. Good night.
Plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be-